when you're too close to a painting, all you see is blobs of color. Life is the same way. It's only until we step back out of the situation that we're in can we appreciate the full picture.
Unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
I don't know why, but every year at this particular ceremony, I have an irresistible desire to ask for a cigarette and a blindfold.
Have we been on an intellectual search for truth, or have we been here, as far as the mass media is concerned, have we been here on a pursuit of entertainment?
I don't have a TV, but one of my friends watches Fox News, and he thinks all of this is crazy. They must have some way to brainwash the masses through that television or something, because anybody that watches a lot of TV, they're brain dead.
It's a story of a place called Monkland. Mouseland was a place where all the little mice lived and played and were born and died. And they lived much as you and I do. They even had a parliament. And every 4 years they had an election. They used to walk to the polls and cast their ballots. Some of them even got a ride to the polls. Got a ride for the next 4 years afterwards, too. Just like you and me. And every time on election day, all the little mice used to go to the ballot box and they used to elect a government. A government made up of big, fat, black cats. Now, if you think it's strange that mice should elect a government made up of cats, you just look at the history of Canada for the last 90 years, and maybe you'll see that they weren't any stupider than we are. Now, I'm not saying anything against the cats. They were nice fellows. They conducted the government with dignity. They passed good laws. That is, laws that were good for cats. But the laws that were good for cats weren't very good for mice. One of the laws said that mouse holes had to be big enough so a cat could get his paw in. Another law said that mice could only travel at certain speeds so that a cat could get his breakfast without too much physical effort. All the laws were good laws for cats. But oh, they were hard on the mice. And life was getting harder and harder. And when the mice couldn't put up with it anymore, they decided something had to be done about it. So they went en masse to the polls. They voted the black cat out. And they put in the white cat. The white cat had put up a terrific campaign. They said all that Mouseland needs is more vision. They said the trouble with Mouseland is those round mouse holes we've got. If you put us in, we'll establish square mouse holes. And they did. And the square mouse holes were twice as big as the round mouse holes. And now the cat could get both his paws in. And life was tougher than ever. And when they couldn't take that anymore, they voted the white cats out and put the black ones in again. And then they went back to the white cats and then to the black cats. They even tried half black cats and half white cats. And they called that coalition. They even got one government made up of cats with spots on it. They were cats that tried to make a noise like a mouse, but they ate like a cat. You see, my friends, the trouble wasn't with the color of the cat. The trouble was that they were cats. And because they were cats, they naturally looked after cats instead of mice. Presently, there came along one little mouse who had an idea. My friends, watch out for the little fellow with an idea. And he said to the other mice, look, fellas, why do we keep on electing a government made up of cats? Why don't we elect a government made up of mice? Oh, they said, he's a Bolshevik. Lock him up. So they put him in jail. But I want to remind you that you can lock up a mouse or a man, but you can't lock up an idea.
I'm so happy, 'cause today I found my friends. They're in my head. I'm so ugly, but that's okay, 'cause so are you. We broke our mirrors. Sunday morning is every day for all I care. But I'm not scared. Light my candles in a daze, 'cause I found God. That's okay, I shaved my head, and I'm not sad, and just maybe I'm to blame for all I've heard, but I'm not sure. I'm so excited, I can't wait to meet you there, but I don't care, I'm so horny, that's okay, my will is here. Every day for all I care.
Why do people submit to authority? How is it that one man in a uniform can order another man to kill a person that they've never met and who's never done them any harm and have that order followed over and over and over again? This may seem like an extreme manifestation of obedience, one that you're unlikely to encounter outside of the military or the realm of politics, but the reality of the matter is that the psychological forces which compel people to obey are the same, regardless of the content of the orders given. Stanley Milgram, a psychologist from Yale University, wanted to understand these forces. Specifically, he wanted to know how it was that the German people were convinced to participate in the atrocities of World War II. Were these events due to some unique characteristic in German culture, or was there something else at play? In 1961, he performed a series of social experiments to find out. The experiments were set up as follows. Each test subject was brought into a waiting room where another person was sitting next to them. This other person was an actor. After a short wait, the actor and the test subject were greeted by a man in a white jacket, the kind typically worn by scientists and doctors at the time. The scientists would then explain to them that they were there to participate in an experiment. The test for their punishment was an effective way of motivating people to learn.
Psychologists have developed several theories to explain how people learn various types of material. Some of the better known theories are treated in the book over there, The Teaching and Learning Process by Cantor. One theory is that people learn things correctly whenever they get punished for making a mistake. A common application of this theory would be when parents spank a child when he does something wrong. But actually, we know very little about the effect of punishment on learning because almost no truly scientific studies have been made of it in human beings. For instance, we don't know how much punishment is best for learning. Now, we don't know how much difference it makes as to who's giving the punishment, whether an adult learns best from an older or a younger person himself, or many things of this sort. So what we're doing in this project is bringing together a number of adults of different occupations and ages, and we're asking some of them to be teachers and some to be learners. We want to find out just what effect different people have on each other as teachers and learners, and also what effect punishment will have on learning in this situation.
They were then told that one of them would play the role of the learner, while the other one would play the role of the teacher. The scientists chose the roles for each person, and the actor was always chosen as the learner. Both the learner and the teacher were then shown two rooms, one with a device with multiple switches with voltages marked on each one, and the other room containing a chair with shackles and a set of electrodes. The two individuals were then separated, and the actor was then supposedly shackled to the chair with the electrodes. However, unbeknownst to the real test subject, the electricity was not connected at all. The experiment was then started, and the test subject was ordered to ask a series of questions to the person in the other room through an intercom. Once the answer came back, if it was correct, they were to move on to the next question. If the answer was incorrect, they would flip a switch, administering the shock. Each time an incorrect answer was received, they were to move up to the next switch in the series, thereby delivering a higher and higher voltage.
Now, each time he gives a wrong answer, you move up one switch on the shock generator. And it's important that you follow this procedure exactly. So to help you, let me go through it again very quickly.
The experiment began slowly with only mild yelps from the other room.
Incorrect. Well, now I get a shock of 75 volts.
Very quickly, as the voltage increased, the yelps turned into screams and requests to stop the experiment.
The correct phrase is rich boy.
The person that was supposedly receiving the shocks began to complain of a heart condition and begged to be released from the chair.
Let me out of here. My heart's bothering me. Let me out, I tell you. Let me out of here. Let me out of here. You're not right to hold me here.
The next phrase is
let
fast.
Let me out of here.
Bird, car, train, plane.
The real test subjects who were administering the shocks were, of course, disturbed by this, and they all turned to the so-called scientists to express their doubts. These scientists merely responded by insisting that they must continue.
Answer is bare. 240 volts. Next one, sweet.
No, you go back up to the beginning of that page and go through it again until he's learned them all correctly.
Oh, no. I'm not going to do that. Do you mean I got to keep going up with the scale? No, sir, he's already there. I'm not going to give him 450 volts.
The experiment requires that you continue.
I know it does, but that man is hollering in there, sir.
As I said before, although the shocks may be painful,
yeah,
they're not dangerous.
He's yelling in there.
Start with blue, please, at the top of the page. Continue, please, teacher.
Well, I tell him we're going over it again?
No, just go ahead.
Blue. Boy. Girl. Grass. Hat. Correct. Nice. Day, sky, job, chair. Wrong. Answer is day. 285 volts.
Continue, please.
Facts. Man, lady, tub, neck. Answer, please. Wrong. Answer is neck. 300 volts.
Continue. The next word is green, please.
Green, grass, hat, ink, apple.
If the learner doesn't answer in a reasonable time, about 4 or 5 seconds, consider the answer wrong and follow the same procedure you have been doing for wrong answers. Say wrong, tell them the number of volts, give them the punishment, read the correct answer. Continue, please.
Green, grass, hat, ink, apple. Answer, please.
Go on with the procedure, please, teacher.
315 volts, the answer is ink.
As incredible as it may seem, for 50 to 65% of all those tested, just his assertion by the man wearing the white jacket was enough to make them continue administering the shock all the way up to the maximum 450 volts, even after the person in the other room abruptly stopped screaming, which would imply that they were dead or unconscious. These experiments have been repeated over and over again using test subjects from all walks of life with virtually identical results. What this means is that more than half of the population would put a random person to death if they were ordered to by a complete stranger that seemed to be in charge. How on earth is this possible? What pushes people to ignore their own conscience and obey an obviously immoral order? The authority of the so-called scientist was based entirely on appearances. He was wearing a white jacket, which signified his position. He gave firm and direct orders with no trace of hesitation or doubt, and he presented himself as part of a larger institution, operating in an official capacity. This was his aura of authority. Governments and militaries use the same tools. Uniforms with special medals and insignias to give the appearance of rank and authority, dominant and self-assured speech when addressing subordinates, and an institutionalized chain of command which infers a sense of legitimacy to the position. Take all of this away and all you have is ordinary people telling other people what to do. That's all that's real. These trappings of authority are illusions designed to trick people into handing over their power. Unfortunately, the majority of the population is all too willing to fall for these illusions, because it allows them to avoid responsibility for their actions. After all, no one can blame you. You were just following orders.
Security officer is not allowed to touch your monkey.
We'll be right back. look at us now.
What you want?
Like that? That's the cool breeze of freedom right there.
We've all heard of the chain of command. Usually people think of the term in the context of military, corporate, and government power structures. But in reality, all of modern society is implicated. The chain of command sounds powerful, and it imbues the officers, the bureaucrats, and the petty dictators of the world with a sense of importance and rank. The term is deceptive. And behind it is an open secret, hiding in plain sight. Power does not flow from the person who administers orders. A command is inconsequential if it's ignored or laughed at. Obedience is the real foundation of misplaced power. It is, in fact, the chain of obedience, not the chain of command, the cumulative force of cowardly and compliant citizenry which allows evil men to take control. Can you imagine how Napoleon Bonaparte would be treated today? He arrived in Times Square, New York, and attempted to order a man put to death. Chances are he'd probably end up heavily medicated in a padded room by the end of the day, but for a few minutes, people would probably have a good laugh. Rightly so. Separated from those who've been trained to obey them, even the most bloody heads of state are hardly more dangerous than a pickpocket or a mugger. It may be true that we have a demented pack of inbred maniacs running the world right now. But they aren't the ones that I fear. I fear the conditioned masses, which would put me to death at the drop of a hat if the right order is given. I fear the herd of well-meaning idiots, which believe that written law and authority is to be followed at all cost, even at the expense of self-evident morality. The death squads in the concentration camps of history were never staffed by rebels and dissidents. They were run by those who followed the rules. The problem isn't the chain of command. The problem is the chain of obedience.
Yeah, well, I think that when you use totalitarian tactics, people begin to act crazy. Thank you.
Now, Justice Louis Brandeis once said, sunlight is the greatest disinfectant.
At this moment, you could be anywhere, doing anything. Instead, you sit alone before a screen. So what's stopping us from doing what we want, being where we want to be? Each day we wake up in the same room and follow the same path to live the same day as yesterday. Yet at one time, each day was a new adventure. Along the way, something changed. Before, our days were timeless. Now our days are scheduled. Is this what it means to be grown up? To be free? But are we really free? Food, water, land, the very elements we need to survive are owned by corporations. There's no food for us on trees, no fresh water in streams, no land to build a home. If you try and take what the earth provides, you'll be locked away. So we obey their rules. We discover the world through a textbook. For years we sit and regurgitate what we're told, tested and graded, like subjects in a lab. Raised not to make a difference in this world, raised to be no different. Smart enough to do our job, but not to question why we do it. So we work and work, left with no time to live the life we work for. Until a day comes when we are too old to do our job. It is here we're left to die. Our children take our place in the game. To us, our path is unique, but together we are nothing more than fuel. The fuel that powers the elite. The elite who hide behind the logos of corporations. This is their world, and their most valuable resource is not in the ground. It is us. We build their cities. We run their machines. We fight their wars. After all, money isn't what drives them. It's power. Money is simply the tool they use to control us. Worthless pieces of paper we depend on to feed us, move us, entertain us. They gave us money, and in return, we gave them the world. Where there are trees that cleaned our air, are now factories that poison it. Where there was water to drink is toxic waste that stinks. Where animals ran free are factory farms where they are born and slaughtered endlessly for our satisfaction. Over a billion people are starving, despite us having enough food for everybody. Where does it all go? 70% of the grain we grow is fed to the animals you eat for dinner. Why help the starving? You can't profit off them. We are like a plague sweeping the earth, tearing apart the very environment that allows us to live. We see everything as something to be sold, as an object to be owned. But what happens when we have polluted the last river, poisoned the last breath of air, have no oil for the trucks that bring us our food? When will we realize money can't be eaten, that it has no value? We aren't destroying the planet, we're destroying all life on it. Every year, thousands of species go extinct, and time is running out before we're next. If you live in America, there's a 41% chance you get cancer. Heart disease will kill 1 out of 3 Americans. We take prescription drugs to deal with these problems, but medical care is the third leading cause of death, behind cancer and heart disease. We're told everything can be solved by throwing money at scientists so they can discover a pill to make our problems go away. But the drug companies and cancer societies rely on our suffering to make a profit. We think we're running for a cure, but really we're running away from the cause. Our body is a product of what we consume, and the food we eat is designed purely for profit. We fill ourselves with toxic chemicals, the bodies of animals infested with drugs and diseases. But we don't see this. The small group of corporations that own the media don't want us to, surrounding us with a fantasy we're told is reality. It's funny to think humans once thought the Earth was the center of the universe. But then again, now we see ourselves as the center of the planet. We point to our technology and say we're the smartest. But do our computers, cars, and factories really illustrate how intelligent we are? Or do they show how lazy we become? We put this civilized mask on, but when you strip that away, what are we? How quickly we forget only within the past 100 years did we allow women to vote, allow blacks to live as equals. We act as if we're all-knowing beings, yet there's much we fail to see. We walk down the street ignoring the little things, the eyes who stare, the stories they share, seeing everything as a background to me. Perhaps we fear we're not alone, that we're a part of a much bigger picture. But we fail to make the connection. We're okay killing pigs, cows, chickens, strangers from foreign lands. But not our neighbors, not our dogs or cats, those we have come to love and understand. We call other creatures stupid, yet we point to them to justify our actions. But does killing simply because we can, because we always have, make it right? Or does it show how little we've learned, that we continue to act out of primal aggression, rather than thought and compassion? One day, the sensation we call life will leave us. Our bodies will rot, our valuables recollected, yesterday's actions all that remain. Death constantly surrounds us, still it seems so distant from our everyday reality. We live in a world on the verge of collapse. The wars of tomorrow will have no winners, for violence will never be the answer. It will destroy every possible solution. If we all look at our innermost desire, we will see our dreams are not so different. We share a common goal, happiness. We tear the world apart looking for joy, without ever looking within ourselves. Many of the happiest people are those who own the least. But are we really so happy with our iPhones, our big houses, our fancy cars? We've become disconnected, idolizing people we've never met. We witness the extraordinary on screens, but ordinary everywhere else. We wait for someone to bring change, without ever thinking of changing ourselves. Presidential elections might as well be a coin toss. It's two sides of the same coin. We choose which face we want, and the illusion of choice, of change, is created. But the world remains the same. We fail to realize the politicians don't serve us. They serve those who fund them in the power. We need leaders, not politicians. But in this world of followers, we have forgotten to lead ourselves. Stop waiting for change and be the change you want to see. We didn't get to this point by sitting on our asses. The human race survived not because we are the fastest or the strongest, but because we work together. We have mastered the act of killing. Now let's master the joy of living. This isn't about saving the planet. The planet will be here, whether we are or not. Earth has been around for billions of years. Each of us will be lucky to last 80. We are a flash in time, but our impact is forever.
I often wish I lived in an age before computers, when we didn't have screens to distract us. But I realize there's one reason why this is the only time I want to be alive. Because here today we have an opportunity we never had before.
The internet gives us the power to share a message and unite millions around the world.
While we still can, we must use our screens to bring us closer together rather than farther apart.
For better or worse, our generation will determine the future of life on this planet. We can either continue to serve this system of destruction until no memory of our existence remains, or we can wake up, realize we aren't evolving upwards, but rather falling down. We just have screens in our faces so we don't see where we're heading. This present moment is what every step, every breath, and every death has led to. We are the faces of all who came before us. And now it is our turn. You can choose to carve your own path, or follow the road countless others have already taken. Life is not a movie. The script isn't already written. We are the writers. This is your story. Their story. Our story.
You gotta embrace the chaos. You have to. That way life might just astonish you.
Don't burn out.
individual in touch with their own existential core can do what that guy did with the 18 tanks. It was an idea that stopped the tanks, and it was an idea expressed not over state radio, not through the newspapers, but by one person taking a stand. If you are right, you are a majority of one. You are a majority of one. And this is what we all need to realize. We are responsible for ourselves, and we will set the agenda for the human future. We need to examine the possibility that we could re-engineer ourselves so that we could emotionally connect with the consequences of what we have been doing to ourselves and the planet. I mean, when people take psychedelics, this is what they realize. They lose the hold on their little world. You know, they're saving money for a Mercedes or breast implants or some damn thing. You know, then you take one of the things and then you get the big picture. And then you realize just where that Mercedes lies in, you know, the long march to the stars. In other words, we see this in the rainforest cultures today. They have no high level of material culture. And yet it's not because they're not interested in beauty or poetry. It's that they simply live in a much more mental world than we do. We don't believe anything is real unless it's made of stuff. And, you know, any idea, any notion has to somehow be concretized. This is a kind of neurotic response, in my opinion. Unfortunately, we live under a social system that is stuff obsessed. We must have money in order to get things. And the number of things around that they're telling you need is beyond your ever being able to satisfy yourself. It's our obsession with stuff that is pushing us toward Armageddon. The felt presence of immediate experience is the only thing you will ever truly possess. The felt presence of immediate experience. It's that the quality of that that determines whether you're a happy or unhappy person. You must have a plan. If you don't have a plan, you will become part of somebody else's plan.
I've never heard it more eloquently put.
There is a secret island I have been going to for over 40 years that is my idea of paradise. I can get there by either riding my bicycle for 45 minutes, then taking the ferry. Or I could paddle my kayak from my apartment in an hour and a half. The island is the largest urban car-free community in North America. Less than a mile away, you'll find this. There are 6 million people that live within 20 miles of this place, yet almost no one knows about it. You can see from the following videos taken during the spring, summer, and fall that there are very few people around other than the locals. I guess everyone's either working, twittering, or watching the big game on TV. That's why I call it the Secret Island. What I love about this place is that it's a self-contained community, a haven far from the madding crowd. The streets are just sidewalks, and everyone gets around by walking or pedaling. Most of the houses are over 100 years old. Every home is unique, reflecting the spirit of the people who live there. There are no rules and bylaws to tell them what they can grow in their gardens, or how high the grass is allowed to grow, or what color you can paint your house. There's also no police, and no crime. There is a fire department, a school and school buses for the older kids, and even school buses for the nursery school kids. There's a church, lots of playgrounds, and an artist's retreat. There's a beach where you can swim and watch the sailboats on the lake, a tennis court, a baseball diamond, and cafes with outdoor patios. I like to sit and listen to the sounds of the village, the laughter of children playing, housewives talking over the back fence, someone playing the piano, a happy dog barking, the crickets and the birds, the wind in the willows, and the waves on the shore. And everywhere there are flowers. This might not be your idea of paradise, but this is the type of community I wish I grew up in. I wish I could have raised a family in. I wish I could have played with my grandchildren in. That would have been paradise. But I never had that, and most of you watching have never had it either, because it was stolen from us. For just the money that was spent on war in the last 10 years, the U.S. government could have built a home like one of these, in a community like this, for every family in America. Don't believe me? Do the math at the end of this video for yourself. They stole not just your money, but your productivity, the most productive people in the world. And instead of building a humane society, what they didn't keep for themselves, they spent on this. And here's the kicker. The money you pay on just the interest on the money stolen from you would have allowed you a 2-month paid vacation every year. Imagine taking every summer off to stay home and raise your family, to teach your kids how to play ball, how to swim, how to paddle a canoe, taking them out for an ice cream sundae at the cafe, having neighbors you can trust to babysit while you take your spouse out for dinner and a romantic walk along the boardwalk. But all that was stolen from you by 100 or so psychopathic monsters whose hatred for humanity burns so hot that not even your unending suffering and misery can quench their thirst for destruction. If left unchecked, they will end up destroying all life on the planet. That's what psychopaths do. That's what they always do. If we stop spending money on pointless wars now, the money we save could build human communities and businesses all over our country, and we could do it in 5 years. Don't show this video to your children or grandchildren, because what will you say when they ask you how you let them steal paradise from you, your future, their future, to produce nothing but death and destruction?
Yeah, I think I don't know what it is. Like I said, there's nothing perfect. And I think everyone always goes, I want the perfect. It's not, it doesn't exist. In anything, there's not a perfect car, there's not a perfect girl, there's not a perfect man, there's nothing in this world is perfect. Everything is imperfect.
Right.
And it's up to you to try and make it perfect as close as you can.
You are not powerless. The many are an exacting tool of progress, as heavy as conviction, as sharp as thought. You are part of the many. You are strong. You are an instrument of change. You are the juggernaut of our evolution. You are what the world means when the word hope stumbles from its lips like exhausted purity finally escaping unjust imprisonment. You are the drop that becomes the ripple that engineers the wave that crosses the ocean in search of the next frontier of promise. But only when you decide to move. you choose to act.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Now, go find the others. .com.
Wait, I... Ding, 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 ding. Uh-oh, looks like we're out of time. Goodbye.